A couple of little boys, aged 8 and 10, who were excessively mischievous. The two were always getting into trouble, and their parents could be assured that if any mischief occurred in their town, their two young sons were in some way involved. The parents were at their wits' ends as to what to do about their son's behavior. The mother had heard that a clergyman in town had been successful in disciplining children in the past. So she asked her husband if he thought they should send the boys to speak with the clergyman. The husband said, "We might as well. We need to do something before I really lose my temper." The clergyman agreed to speak with the boys, but asked to see them individually. The 8-year-old went to meet with him first. The clergyman sat the boy down and asked him sternly, "Where is God?" The boy made no response, so the clergyman repeated the question in an even sterner tone, "Where is God?" Again, the boy made no attempt to respond. So the clergyman raised his voice even more and shook his finger in the boy's face. "Where is God?" At that, the boy bolted from the room and ran directly home, slamming himself in the closet. His older brother followed him into the closet and asked what had happened. The youngest brother replied, "We are in big trouble this time. God is missing, and they think we did it." When I first saw that story about the two brothers, I chuckled over their antics. But many years ago, I must sadly admit that I was asking myself over and over again the same question that the clergyman was asking the 8-year-old, "Where is God?" Because God was missing from my life. And as I was thinking about what I wanted to say in my homily for this Maundy Thursday service, the words of 1 Corinthians reawakened my memories from those long ago days. When Craig and I moved to Cary about 16 years ago, we had been playing hooky from church for quite a few years. While living in Florida, after our kids were in college, I sometimes worked 60 hours a week and threw in a workday on Saturday on occasion. Sunday had been my only day to get the wash done, etc. In the spring of 1994, our youngest son Steve and his wife Kathy invited us to join them at an Easter service at their Presbyterian church. And while communion was not offered at that service, Craig and I enjoyed it nonetheless, but evidently not enough for us to change our ways and return to church, because I kept right on doing the laundry on Sunday. Then in February of 1995, we moved to Cary. Old friends of ours who had lived in Raleigh for several years happened to mention that now that we were in the Bible Belt, people would ask what church we were affiliated with. And wanting to fit in, we sought out the Episcopal Church. Not the best of reasons, but I suppose that God uses whatever means he can to bring back his lost sheep. On our first Sunday at St. Paul's, as I was kneeling at the altar rail for communion, I was so surprised to find out how emotional I was at that moment. My eyes began to tear up, and I couldn't quite identify what I was feeling at that moment. And then the same thing happened to me the next week. I was kneeling at the communion rail and the tears began again. This pattern continued for quite some time. I couldn't figure out why I had the urge to cry as I was taking communion. And I suppose God looked down and said in a frustrated voice, "She still doesn't get it, does she?" Well, eventually I did get it. I began to realize that my tears were a result of my great sense of joy. I felt this wonderful sense of homecoming, of becoming connected to Christ, and again through the Eucharist. And Paul is showing us in 1 Corinthians how important the Eucharist is in connecting us to the living Christ and to one another as to the household of God. And because it's St. Paul's, we strongly believe in this connection. We are especially mindful that when any of our parishioners are not able to come to church due to illness, whatever, our visiting Eucharistic ministers takes the Eucharist to them. That's how we keep these parishioners connected to Jesus and to us in church. Though we are many, we are one. The disciples recognized the resurrected Jesus alive among them only after they began the celebration of the Eucharist. In the breaking of the bread, they recognized Jesus in their midst. Before their encounter with Jesus, they were sad and detached, wandering to the city of Emmaus, seemingly without purpose. They seemed to have lost their heads, and they had no understanding. But once Jesus connects them to himself in the Eucharist, they are filled with excitement and enthusiasm. They found a connection to their brothers and sisters and to the mission of Jesus. The Eucharist is the most important binding factor in the life of the church. It is what connects us to the heart and life of Christ. I felt that so strongly in my own life when the Eucharist reconnected me to Jesus, which in turn reconnected me to the church. So it is not a coincidence that the Lord instituted the Lord's Supper on the same night in which he was betrayed. This night, the disciples would always remember, and the events of this night would add further significance to the supper and what it is all about. The time had come for Jesus to fulfill the will of God in bringing about the redemption of man through the sacrifice of himself, and this he obviously knew. The significance is that Jesus did not forget us, and so he institutes a memorial supper, which we all partake of each Sunday, and especially during this Holy Week, so that we will not forget him and what he has done for us. Amen.